Why video game makers want you to pay and then keep on paying. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. This week is E3, the huge video game trade show, and people spent something like $138 billion on games in 2018, according to various research. And the game industry has been growing in double digits for a decade, which is almost unheard of. Part of the reason is way more people playing games, mostly thanks to mobile gaming, but also people spend a lot more money in games on virtual currencies and virtual goods, like digital outfits called skins, upgrades, or accessories. Vili Leidonavirta is an economic sociologist at the Oxford Internet Institute. He studies digital economies. For a long time, games had their own complex economies that were entirely virtual. And then a big shift happened.
Then we had, in the 90s, the first massively multiplayer online role-playing games that gave rise to players trading virtual goods inside the game for real money. So you could buy a virtual castle for something like $1,000. And now we are in a situation where this sort of a virtual item is obviously a very major source of revenues. And conversely, we're moving away from the more complex player-to-player virtual economies.
It's not without controversy, though, right?
Yes. So there was controversy around pay to win, which means if you're used to the idea that after you've paid for entry into the game, then everyone plays on equal merits, then this idea that you could pay to get some kind of an advantage in the game was obviously very controversial, because now suddenly you have real-world economic inequality seeping into this game economy, which was meant to be a sort of escape.
Right. A lot of the incentives now around these sort of basic economic decisions, buy this and you will look cooler, have a lot to do with status.
Yes, I think that's absolutely accurate. So originally, in the early noughties, when people started paying money for virtual items, clothes for virtual characters and whatnot, there were a lot of people wondering, why would anyone pay real money for something as useless as that? And then we studied that topic, and we found that people spent real money on virtual items for the very same reasons as they spend real money on any items, you know, branded handbags and whatnot. They are symbols and markers that are used in showing status, but also membership of a particular group or community or subculture, or drawing a distinction to other people. And these are the main drivers of consumer behavior, whether in the virtual economy or outside of it.
Right. And now it's become an insult in the Fortnite world to refer to, well, and the real world also, to refer to someone as a default.
Yes, I suppose so. Although norm core has been one fashion trend. Could be a statement in itself.
Reclaim your digital identity by saying, I'm not default, I'm norm core. That's amazing.
Yes.
I hope that that happens. Is it a little disappointing? I mean, yeah, I may be showing my age, but it does feel like kind of a bummer that those of us who grew up in those early days of, you know, like you mentioned, EVE Online or these just like incredibly complex digital economies that were so beautifully constructed and well thought out. It's like Lord of the Rings versus, you know, Nickelback or something. It just feels a little, disappointing that the economics are so simplistic now, so blunt force.
Well, the number of people playing games, playing digital games, has increased. So those more complex and evolved virtual economies haven't really gone anywhere. You know, they're still there. They're just for certain audiences. True. And then you have bigger audiences that are enjoying experiences that are more accessible for people who don't necessarily have so much, for instance, time to invest into grappling with a complex virtual economy. So in that sense, I'm not disappointed. The potentially positive thing about this whole trend around spending more money on virtual goods and virtual currencies is that the environmental impact of virtual consumption could potentially be very low. You can purchase new items and discard your old virtual boots or whatnot, and you're not increasing your carbon footprint in any way. The only thing is, if we keep upgrading our hardware at the pace we're upgrading it, obviously that has a big carbon footprint. But the game content itself, you can spend any amount of money on game content without necessarily increasing your carbon footprint. And I think that's quite interesting. So the more virtual we can turn our economy in that sense, the more we can potentially decouple consumption from environmental impacts.
Vili Lehtonen-Virta is an economic sociologist at the Oxford Internet Institute. Now, generally speaking, gamers are fine with in-game microtransactions when the game is free or cheap and the purchases are mostly cosmetic. But research shows most people don't want to have to pay to win. And now for some related links. You can find links to the research I mentioned on our website, marketplacetech.org, and a link to the Cambridge Dictionary that explains that the noughties, in British English, is the period of years between 0 and 10 in any century, usually referring to 2000 to 2010. All right, back to video games. There's a good analysis from intelligenteconomist.com about the history of microtransactions in games and how it is still controversial, especially when companies want you to pay full price for a console game, which for you non-gamers is like $60 to $80, and then they ask you to spend more money on things like loot boxes, which are full of randomly generated digital goods. In fact, loot boxes got so controversial that they're banned in some countries as basically gambling. In 2017, Electronic Arts actually pulled microtransactions out of its game, Star Wars Battlefront 2, after fans complained that they had to buy the game and then spend another $80 to unlock a character like Darth Vader, or spend at least 40 hours playing. And that was the case for each of the characters that you wanted to unlock. It's a delicate balance for companies. Fans don't like the double dip, obviously. But on the other hand, some analysts think that removing microtransactions is partly why Battlefront 2 actually didn't make as much money as investors had hoped. But Investopedia reports that the two games that make the most money off microtransactions are League of Legends and Fortnite, both of which are free to download and play. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. If you're a member of your local public radio station, we thank you because your support helps those stations keep programs like Marketplace Tech on the air. But for Marketplace to really grow, we need additional investment from those who care most about what we do. Superfans like you. Help us keep telling stories that matter. Become a Marketplace investor today at marketplace.org. And thanks.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.